This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Run with Kee Kam, and I'm Wong Shaoning. 7:37, Friday, the 22nd of July. And at this moment, we are looking at news that the country was actually shocked by the surprise seizure of two Petronas subsidiaries in Azerbaijan by the purported heirs of the Sulu Sultanate. This was after a French arbitration court ruled in March that Malaysia has to pay the purported heirs at least 62 billion ringgit. Now, the seizures were part of a legal effort launched in 2017 by these Sulu's descendants to receive compensation over land in Sabah that their ancestors leased to the British in 1878.
So, according to the lawyers representing the Sulu heirs, as long as Malaysia refuses to accept the award, its debt to the claimants is likely to increase by 10% annually. However, the Malaysian government has vowed that it will protect Malaysia's assets over these claims and is forming a special task force to address this issue. But how did it come to this? And can Malaysia fight the claims based on legal grounds?
So for more on this, we have on the line with us Roger Chin, president of the Sabah Law Society. Good morning, Roger. Now, legal experts have called this case as one of the most unusual international arbitration disputes in history. Help us understand what makes this case unusual. And is there any precedent to such a case?
Good morning. Well, quoting Dr. Colin Ong QC, his comments to the Financial Times on 17th of July 2022, he basically said it does not seem to have a precedent, as no one could have predicted 144 years ago that an agreement signed in Borneo during British colonial times would give rise to such a dispute today. So no, there is no such precedent, and certainly very unusual.
So Roger, why is arbitration the forum for this dispute?
Okay. There is a reference in the agreement that in the event of any dispute of any kind between the parties or the parties' heirs and successors with Overbeck then the matter should be submitted to Her Britannic Majesty's Consul General for Borneo, and the arbitrator found this to be sufficient arbitration clause. So in anything that goes to arbitration, you need an arbitration clause. In this particular matter, the arbitrator found that was sufficient in the agreement and construed that as an arbitration clause, and therefore it is there for arbitration now.
Roger, can I just ask, I'm just trying to understand this. Last night, there was a meeting amongst the lawmakers that was not... No information about it was disseminated to the public. Ostensibly, everything comes under the Official Secrets Act. The reason being is that it would be sub judice. I'm just trying to understand, why is it sub judice? Why should it not be transparent?
In the widest general sense, sub judice just means that anything before the court, public comment should not be made, so that the courts would not be influenced by public comment. Why should it be not transparent? I think the reason that they're giving is anything that is publicly debated, for example, in Parliament, may give hints to the Sulu heirs as to what course of action they should take. So if you can imagine a game that you're playing where you know what the other side's going to do, you may be able to preempt and get around what the strategy is that is revealed. So I think maybe that's the main reason why. As far as whether it's sub judice or not, I that's an open question, really.
And Roger, can we rewind to the very beginning? Are we here in arbitration because we didn't pay the 5,300 that we were supposed to pay annually to these Sulu heirs? Is it as simple as that?
Honestly, it would appear so. So what happened was, in 2013, we stopped paying. And of course, there is a letter from the Attorney General then, which I think has been widely circulated, where it basically says that Malaysia is willing and able to continue to pay this amount, and it was not paid. And this letter was relied upon by the Sulu heirs in the arbitration. So in short, yes, it's not about sovereignty. I think I have to clarify that right from the start. It's not about whether or not the Sulu heirs are claiming Sabah. This particular case, of course, they're claiming Sabah in a wider sense. But this particular case, it was basically that they did not pay that monies pursuant to that agreement.
It does seem like something that could have been sorted out quite early in the state quite earlier on. Do we know why Putrajaya did not engage initially with the Sulu heirs?
Well, did the Malaysian really not engage? Because you would note that in a joint statement released by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the Attorney General's Chambers, it was stated that the claimants, without the government of Malaysia's knowledge, proceeded to obtain an ex parte order from the tribunal in Paris to recognize a partial award on jurisdiction rendered by Dr. Sampa on 25th of May 2020, which had actually been previously annulled as a consequence of the decision of the court there, the court in Madrid, for the reasons that the service of the notice of proceedings for appointment of arbitrator was not done, was not served on Malaysia properly. So in breach of that, that was stopped then. And on the basis of that French order, Dr. Stamper, the arbitrator, changed the seat of arbitration to Paris, France, to render that final award, which is the one that we are talking about now. The government of Malaysia had filed an appeal against that French order and in the Paris court, and the Malaysian government had actually also successfully obtained an ex parte order sometime in 2021 from the president of the Paris Court of Appeal, suspending the effects of that French order in France and barring the claimant from relying on it. That is what happened. So did the Malaysian government really not engage? I think they did. I think things moved very quickly. And the other side definitely was trying at all times to, trying at all times to stay one step ahead, perhaps. But I don't think the Malaysian government didn't engage. I think they did try to engage, and they did engage. The other side was moving on a different tangent and having different strategies to nullify whatever Malaysia was doing. So, I think the Malaysian government did do something.
Okay, and we do know any time when you're involved in international arbitration, the bills are going to be astronomical. Now, who is funding this litigation for those Sulu heirs? Do we know anything about them?
I think there's a lot of speculation in cyberspace, but no one seems to know definitely. However, there is such a thing called third-party litigation funding, and it is common for third parties to fund litigation in order to share in monies recovered. In this case, $15 billion is a lot of money and a lot to share in, so I'm sure third-party litigation funders would be more than keen to fund this. But of course, this is just pure speculation.
So can these purported heirs continue to seize other assets even after Petronas has obtained a stay of execution at the French courts?
Okay, so you must take note that this stay of execution actually only applies in Paris. Whether or not when you bring that French award to another country to try to register and execute, that country would agree on a stay is entirely up to that country's courts. So that stay order in itself does not give you a blanket stay in all other countries. It will give you a stay in France. So, for example, you go to another country, that country's court will look at it and say, yes or no, I will grant a stay. Generally, most common law countries will agree to give a stay because of that stay in France. But perhaps a civil law country may not and allow it to be registered. And once it's registered, it most certainly can be executed upon. And for that reason, Malaysian assets overseas in New York Convention countries are definitely still at risk.
Okay, what can the government do now? And what should the Malaysian government, what should their next step be? Is it to approach the heirs for settlement or basically fight this case out in another arbitration court or actually in an international law court?
Well, what must be done now is certainly to try to set aside the French award. Mm. That would be the starting point. If you can manage to set aside the French award, which the Malaysian government is trying to do, then that basically ends the whole story as far as this saga is concerned. So that's what you would do, firstly. Secondly, of course, in the meanwhile, before you manage to set it aside, you would obviously try to resist it in every possible country that they try to, the Sulu heirs will try to register this award. But, of course, what you're saying is everything is really open. Arriving at some sort of settlement. However, I don't believe the Malaysian government at the moment would look at that, and maybe the population, the rakyat, will actually also not agree with settling with the Sulu heirs. Mm-hmm. But that remains an option. First and foremost, I guess you would need to set aside that French award, which the Malaysian government is trying to do.
Okay, Roger, I might be putting you in a bit of a spot, but what are the merits of Malaysia's case if we were to succeed to put the French award aside?
I honestly can't answer that for the time being because I'd have to study it. I guess one of the best ways of doing that is what's been raised in the papers already in the news regarding Malaysia's sovereignty and jurisdiction. For example, was it properly taken up in Spain? Remember, I said earlier that the clause would seem to imply that you started in the UK. Any arbitration, if number one, if there is an arbitration clause, where would you start the arbitration? Since it refers to Her Majesty's Britannic Council, wouldn't you think that would mean somewhere in London? So I guess sovereignty is one thing, that I'm a sovereign country and I have immunity. The second one would be whether or not the Spain or France or anywhere else besides London or UK has got jurisdiction to hear an arbitration on this basis. So I think these could be grounds which could be used to hopefully successfully defend or set aside the French award.
And one final question. Is the worst case scenario the possibility of us having to pay up that $15 billion claim?
The worst case scenario obviously would be the Sulu heirs continue to go all around the world. Remember, there are around 169 countries in the New York Convention, go around the world and looking for Malaysian assets until to satisfy the award, until the USD $15 billion is satisfied. So that's the worst case scenario. But I doubt very much you'll get to that because the Malaysian government is very actively doing its best to try to stop this and prevent them from doing any further harm that they've been done already.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Roger Chin, president of the Sabah Law Society, giving us a very a blow-by-blow account of the history, where we are and what are the next steps the Malaysian government has to take, actually, which is to basically set aside the French court order. That's number one.
It really makes me want to go back and really study this case again. It's got all the trappings of a good Netflix series.
Yeah, but over 5,300 ringgit, that's the root of the problem, right? Because we didn't pay that. We're heading into some messages. We'll just come back in a bit to talk about the Malaysian economy. Stay tuned for that, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.